But these things were never done as a circus turn, but only for the science of raising the Kundalini in sincere and genuine students. Let us, then, be true occultists and let us very, very seriously suspect anyone who offers to give a demonstration of balancing on one finger or any of those really crackpotted asininities which the person with no confidence in himself and no occult powers at all tries to delude the unwary with. The true occultist never, never gives proof of his abilities unless there is a completely overriding good reason for it. I should also include in this people like Dinah Driptree, the backstreet clairvoyant. This poor woman, perhaps for several hours a day, scrubs floors carrying around a bucket and a mop. Then at the end of her work she trudges off home. There is usually a bus strike. Anyway, she trudges off home and gets herself done up in some really outlandish fashion. She sticks a colorful thing around herself, and then she wraps a sort of gaudy handkerchief around her head which she thinks looks like a turban. She has very dim lights in the room so the clients won't see how dirty it really is. Then she is ready. 107. 108. To start business. Frequently she has got hold of some sort of crystal from somewhere. Often it is kept as a showpiece exposed to the sunlight so that people will see this thing and think what a wonderful woman she is when she is not scrubbing floors. Well, there is nothing that ruins a crystal more thoroughly than being exposed to sunlight. It kills the odinetic power of the crystal. Dinah Driptree, then, has somehow lured a foolish client into her room. Usually she sits down opposite him, looks him up and down and gets him talking a bit. Most people are so fond of hearing their own voice that they tell all and a bit more. So Dinah Driptree merely has to look in her crystal, seeing nothing but her own reflection, and repeat back in gloomy tones some of the things which her client has told her. Then she gets a reputation for being a great seeress. The client frequently doesn't remember having told her anything, and he parts with his money without a murmur. Dinah Driptree cannot be a clairvoyant if she is doing it for money, because that loses her the power even if she had it in the first case. No average clairvoyant is clairvoyant all the time throughout the 24 hours. A person may be highly clairvoyant at a most inconvenient time, but then when there is need for clairvoyance the person is not clairvoyant, and if you are doing it for money you cannot say, "Oh, this is one of my off days, I don't feel able to tell you the truth today." So people like Dinah Driptree have to make their money, and when they cannot see anything in the crystal, which is all the time with them, then they have to make things up. You will have experiences of not being in top form all the time. You may say, "I don't know what's wrong with me, I can't concentrate today." Well, in the same way with clairvoyance, you don't concentrate in clairvoyance, you do just the reverse, so that if a person is tensed up or too excited then that person cannot relax, and for the time being the clairvoyant ability falls off. The second rule is, for the sake of your own pocketbook, never, never pay anything whatever to have your fortune told by a crystal gazer or a person like that. They cannot do it for money, and if they try to put it on a commercial basis, then they just have to make up from time to time, and the more a person makes up things the more quickly they lose any clairvoyant ability which they might have possessed in the first case. 109. Another thing which should be made clear now is that no person can control the astral of another. You sometimes get an idiotic sort of woman who does a cackle of laughter, like a hen about to lay a particularly large egg, and says, "Oh, I've got a hold on you, I met you in the astral last night and now I can control your astral." If you ever meet a person like that, the best thing is to call those white-coated attendants who carry the mentally afflicted off to a comfortably padded cell. No person can suffer any injury when in the astral. No person can be controlled by another person while in the astral. The only thing to be afraid of being afraid. Fear is like a corrosive acid on the mechanism of a thing like a watch. Fear corrodes, fear corrupts. So long as you are not afraid, nothing at all bad can happen to you. So again, if any idiotic crackpot claims to be able to control you, then you'd better send them off to be examined by a psychiatrist or call the police. It's time the police did something anyhow. It is not possible except under certain conditions and circumstances to hypnotize a person against that person's will. Of course, those who have been trained in Tibet, and only in the Temple of the Inner Mysteries of Tibet, could do such a thing if they wanted to for a good reason, but every person who has been trained in the Inner Temple of Mysteries of Tibet has himself been hypnotically conditioned so that he cannot do anything of this type to harm anyone else but only to help someone else, and even then only in very unusual circumstances. If someone starts gazing at you and trying to hypnotize you, then gaze straight back at the bridge of his nose between his eyes, gaze straight back, and if he doesn't know enough he will soon be hypnotized instead of you. You have nothing to fear whatever except of being afraid. Occultism is an ordinary thing just the same as breathing, or lifting a book, or taking a step. You can walk safely unless you are clumsy and careless, and then you can slip on a banana skin. Well, that is your fault, not the fault of walking. Occultism is safer than walking because there are no banana skins in occultism. The only thing to be afraid of, I repeat, is of being afraid. Of course, it's quite difficult trying to reason with people, quite difficult trying to explain a thing to a person, because there is a definite law that in any battle between the emotion and reason, emotion always wins no matter how great one's. 110. Reasoning power. If one gets really excited and enraged, the emotion overrides the reason. A person lives in a tall apartment building 9 floors high, if you like. These buildings have a flimsy iron railing at the edge of their balconies. A good push would probably knock the thing over, but emotion tells us that it is quite safe because there is a railing there and we experience no fear at all. But supposing that railing was removed, then we should have great fear of falling even if we stood in precisely the same position as we should have stood if the railing had been there. At all times, then, we should keep in mind that in any battle between emotion and reason, emotion always wins, and for that reason we should not let ourselves get unduly excited. Instead we should try to get a step nearer to nirvana, which is the controlling of emotion so that no longer does it stop the workings of reason. We must realize that some of these little backstreet people who have read a book or perhaps have just heard of the title of a book, are not necessarily the best teachers. The only person who is qualified to teach anything to do with the occult is the person who obviously knows. A person who has been trained at a reputable place. I, for instance, can and have produced papers showing that I have been trained and hold medical degrees of the University of Chongqing, and my papers describe me as a Lama of the Potala Monastery of Lhasa. Naturally, one does not produce such papers just for curiosity seekers or to settle bets, as I have frequently been asked. Publishers have seen such papers and they testify to that in their foreword to one or more of my books. One would not go to a quack doctor, one who would give us a bonk on the head with a mallet in order to make us unconscious and so oblivious to pain. One would only go to a qualified doctor. In the same way, one should not go to a quack who has no real knowledge of the occult except some imaginary sounds in the head. All too often, as you know, voices in the head may even be a symptom of mental derangement. You should choose your occultist as soundly as you choose your physical doctor. When a person leaves this earth, they may be advanced people who have gone on to higher planes. In that case, only a medium with very considerable power can make contact. B. 111. Cause. In ordinary physical concepts, those who have passed over have gone to a different time zone, and if you try to telephone Australia from England, then unless you know the time zone of your friend, you cannot get in touch. You may be trying to call in the middle of the night, for instance. But in our medium case we are trying to call someone who is already a few thousand light years into the future. Most times a medium who lacks experience will be deluded by those plausible beings who are also known as elementals. Perhaps we should discuss elementals so that we may know something about the subject. People have rather remarkable ideas about that order of beings which we call elementals. Frequently they are confused with the souls of humans, but they are nothing at all like that. They mimic humans just the same as monkeys copy humans. And the average medium who cannot see into the astral will be led astray by elementals pretending to be humans. Elementals are not evil spirits either, They are merely the thought forms which have been generated by constant repetition. For example, if a person constantly gets drunk, then that person will have confused thoughts and has excess energy, being no longer under control, will run wild and will perhaps conjure up thoughts of pink elephants or spotted lizards, or something like that. These are things are elementals. As we have said, each cycle of evolution is constituted by those leaving a cycle and those starting a cycle, so we get what is in effect a life wave of living souls or overselves, and each of these waves has its own contribution to evolution. It leaves its own pattern just the same as an Oxford man leaves a different pattern on civilization to the Yale man, and the Borstal man leaves yet a different pattern. So when this life wave goes on, their memory remains as a static force, and as there have been so many people concerned, the force is built up into what is in the astral plane a solid creature. These creatures which have been built up and left behind by succeeding waveforms or cycles of evolution are solid craters, but they lack the divine spark, they lack intelligence, and instead they are only able to mimic or reproduce things which have entered into their consciousness at some time. You can, if you try hard enough, teach a parrot to repeat a few words. It does not necessarily understand the words, but the parrot is repeating a sonic pattern. In the same way, 112 mentals repeat a cybernetic pattern. For those who are really interested in the subject, elementals are divided into many different types in much the same way as in humans there are black people, brown people, yellow people, white people, etc. In the elemental groups there are four main types attached to the earth astral plane, and that is how we get some of the qualities of astrology. The astrologer will know of the spirits of air, the spirits of fire, the spirits of water, and the spirits of earth, for they are the four main types of elementals. The witchcraft people, or the alchemist, would refer to them as gnomes for one group, sylphs for the second group, salamanders for the third group, and for the last group undines. If you want to take it a bit farther beyond the astrologer and beyond the witches, you can go on to the stage of the chemists, because you can say that the earth group represent a solid in which all molecules adhere. After the solid we have the liquid, water, in which molecules move freely. Next on our list is air, which also includes gases of various types, and in air the molecules repel each other. Finally, for our chemical correspondents, there is fire, and in fire molecules change or transmute into some other substance. The term elemental is almost always reserved for those beings who occupy a place in one of the groups just mentioned, but there are other groups such as nature spirits. Nature spirits control the growth of trees and plants, and they help in the transmutation of organic compounds so that plants may be enriched and fertilized. These groups all have an over-self head, or if you prefer, an over-soul. They are known as the Manu. The human tribe has a Manu, each country has a Manu, and nature spirits have a Manu. There is a Manu who controls and oversees the work of the tree spirits, just as there is a Manu who controls the work of the rock spirits. In Egypt, many, many centuries ago, highly trained priests were able to get in contact with these Manus. For example, Bubasts, the cat god. The Manu of cats everywhere. We must have negative or we cannot have positive, so just as there are good spirits, so also are there evil spirits, demons if you like. They are evil to us here, but on another plane of existence they may be good. If you are at all electrically inclined, this explanation might appeal to you. Suppose you have 113. A 12-volt car battery. At the extreme is the positive and at the other extreme is the negative. But now supposing that you connect another battery, 6 or 12 volt, in series onto this first battery, then the negative of the original battery will be as the positive of the second battery, and the negative of the second battery will be more negative than the negative of the first battery. All this, stated simply, is that everything is relative and to be compared with each other. Thus we have evil here at present, but if we can find a worse world, then our evil would be as good on that world, and what is good on this world would be not very good at all on the higher world. I said that man was having different waves of evolution. Well, that really is so. For example, There was the Lemurian race, which mainly operated by instincts and passions, and then evolved higher emotions. After that there came the Atlantean race, which started off with higher emotions and then evolved a reasoning mind. The Aryan race came next. This started off with the functioning mind and will eventually obtain an abstract mind. After the Aryan we come to the sixth race, which starts with the abstract mind and eventually will obtain spiritual perception. With the seventh race, which will start with spiritual perception, it will go on to achieve cosmic consciousness. For those of you who are interested in the theory of land drift, that is, that the whole world was covered with one continent at the start and that it broke up under centrifugal rotation, there is now very considerable proof that this, which was known as Pangaea, first separated into two supercontinents known as Laurasia, which was in the north, and Gondwanalana in the south. These in time broke up into separate lands and continents. However, that is taking us rather far from our original theme. A medium is a person who, through some difference in brain structure, is able to receive messages from another plane of existence in just the same way as a radio can receive messages which the unaided human ear cannot. A medium usually goes into a form of trance, either light or heavy depending upon the medium, and during that trance the consciousness of the medium is suppressed so that another entity can operate the controls and give utterance to certain thoughts in the form of words. Most mediums will have a spirit control from among those 114 who have been kept upon the lower astral for some specific purpose. The spirit control, or guide as many call it, acts as a policeman and prevents, in some cases, mischievous elementals from doing harm to the medium. The overself of the medium has departed so as to give the guide free rein, but the medium who is sitting in a chair or lying on a couch will not be aware of anything at all. If you see that the medium is looking about, taking too much interest in events, then you can be quite reasonably sure that you do not have a genuine medium. The whole point is that the medium should place his or her personality completely aside and function merely as a telephone. After all, if you are going to get a message from the other side of death, you do not want the medium's interpretation, you want a clear unbiased statement. And the only way that one can obtain that clear unbiased statement is to let the spirit communicator communicate without interference from the medium. Again, you should remember that when one gets in contact with what we might term the spirits of the departed so that they may tell us of their experiences, we merely listen to the accounts of their dreams in the other world, because the really evolved souls have gone on to a dimension which the average medium cannot possibly reach. It is only when one has a real master that one can reach forward into time and call back a message from one of those very far departed souls, and that is why it is so difficult to obtain really worthwhile statements from those who have passed over. Supposing we try to look into the matter of the average medium. Let us say that the woman has some gifts in mediumistic work and she can obtain rapport with people who have passed over. But let us remember that these people who have just passed over are still in the lower astral. They are in what we might term purgatory, they are in the intermediate stage, they are in the waiting room waiting for directions as to what to do and where to go. Suppose you look upon these people as patients in a hospital, because it is a fact that many of these people do have to undergo certain spirit therapy to overcome the shocks of their earth experience. So let us say that we are in contact with one of these people who is as a patient in a hospital. The patient is in bed and thus his only knowledge of his surroundings is that limited to the small area visible from his bed. He cannot see the 115 whole work of the hospital, and if he can see other scenery, then possibly it is only that which he can see from the window. Supposing you get a report from one of the guides or some spirit whose special task is to assist those who are about to pass over or who have actually passed over. If they speak, that is much the same as getting a report from some inexperienced little nurse or ward maid at the hospital, and not even if you can go to a lecture of the hospital committee can you realize the full scope of what is going on. You can only make an evaluation by leaving the hospital and touring, as one might say, the town. When one leaves this world which we call Earth, one goes to the lower astral, which the Bible terms purgatory, and that may, as we have stated, be regarded as a hospital for sick souls where they are cured of many of the shocks which they endured or sustained upon this crude earth. Unfortunately, the lower astral would better be compared to a mental home, in which patients are received and their cases considered, just as a psychiatrist may sometimes discuss things with a patient so that he himself can state his faults and ailments. So in the lower astral can the newly arrived soul see what he did wrong on the earth and see what he has to do about it to atone. Then for a short time the soul rests and recuperates, and perhaps walks in pleasant parkland, all the time receiving medication and treatment to assist him or her to carry on with the next phase of existence. You will quite appreciate that people in the astral world are absolutely solid to each other. You upon this world can bump into a wall, but a ghost would walk through that wall, yet in the astral and other planes the walls are quite solid to those occupants. From all this you can see that if you make a commotion and go from medium to medium and seance to seance trying to get in touch with one who has passed over, then you are causing considerable harm to that person. Think of it in this way: a loved one has been taken ill and has been taken to a mental home or some other form of hospital. Suppose you keep on calling and pestering that person, then you impede that person's progress. The doctors cannot get his full attention because you are meddling in his affairs, you are stopping treatment and causing considerable distress. When you try to get in touch with an entity who has gone. 116. Beyond the lower astral, then you are interfering with a person who is trying to do a particular task. People who have left this world do not just sit about on clouds strumming harps and singing hymns, they have more work to do than they had upon this earth. And if they are subject to continual distraction, then they cannot get on with their work. Suppose you call a very busy executive, or a research scientist, or a surgeon who is doing a difficult operation, suppose you keep jerking at his coattails, then you distract him and he cannot give attention to what he is doing. Mediums should never, never try to get in touch with the departed unless under very special conditions and with very special safeguards. Fortunately, there is already a built-in safeguard. Many worthy mediums, believing absolutely in their own sincerity, merely contact elementals who are having quite a bit of fun. That is all right if you know you are contacting elementals, but if you know that much, why play with a gang of half-witted monkeys? 117. Chapter 7. End of a chapter. The dog whined disconsolately, ears drooping mournfully down towards the ground. Whined, and whined again, with his tail hanging listlessly between his legs. A sudden shiver of apprehension twitched his body and caused him gloomily to give utterance to a short, sharp bark. The leaves of the trees rustled as if in sympathy as the dog cowered at the door. For a moment he became alert, vibrant with suppressed energy as he listened to some distant sound, then slumped again in disappointed misery. On an impulse he leapt up and scrabbled at the door, daring great gouges in the woodwork. Throwing his head back he gave voice to wolf-like shrieks and yells. Soft, padding footsteps sounded round the corner of the house, and an old voice said, "Bruno, Bruno. Be quiet, will you? You cannot go in, the master is very ill." Then, as an afterthought, adding, "Here, you come with me, I'll tie you up in the potting shed where you will be out of the way." The old gardener fumbled in his pockets and produced a length of binder twine. Passing one end through the dog's collar, he led him off to a distant clump of trees. Dispiritedly the dog followed, head down and whining. "What's wrong, George?" asked a feminine voice from a kitchen window. "Ah. The dog knows what's happening, that's what's wrong," replied George, not pausing to say more. The woman turned to some unseen companion and muttered, "Well, I never did, it just shows that dumb animals know what's going on, that's what I say." Sniffling, she turned her back to the window and went on with her task. In the big old house all was quiet. No clatter of crockery, no sounds of housework. Silence. Almost the silence of the grave. Like an explosion, a hidden telephone burden burred again before it was hastily seized. The tinny rattle of the distant caller's voice, and the reply in grave, masculine tones, "No sir, I am afraid not. There is no hope. The doctor is with him now. A pause, while the tinny rattle sounded again, and the 118. Rejoiner, yes, sir, I will give her your sympathy at the first available moment. Goodbye. From a distant door there came a gentle tinkle, short, and understanding. The shush-shush of hurrying footsteps and the merest whisper of sound as a door was opened. Ah, yes, father. An elderly female voice said. They are expecting you, I will take you up. Quietly the old housekeeper and the priest made their way along the carpeted corridors and up the wide staircase. The gentlest of taps on a bedroom door, and a whispered word to the priest. The door was opened silently, and a young woman appeared, came on the landing, and closed the door behind her. He is failing fast, she said to the priest, and he asked to speak to you alone. The doctor will leave the room when you enter. Will you come with me? She turned and led the way into the bedroom. The room was large, very large, and was indeed a relic of a bygone era. Heavy curtains were drawn across high windows, shutting out both sound and light. Old paintings adorned the walls, portraits of almost forgotten ancestors. By the side of the vast old bed a green shaded lamp threw an uncertain light around the gloomy room. A small, shrunken figure lay motionless on the wide double bed. A man with skin like faded parchment, wizened and feeble. By his bedside sat a doctor who rose to greet the priest. He wanted very much to see you, said the former. I will leave the room and wait outside. He is very weak, so call me if you need me. Nodding, he walked round the bed and accompanied the young woman out of the room. For a moment the priest looked about him, then placed his small case on a bedside table so that he could take out certain ritual articles. Ah! I don't need that, whispered a voice as dry as dust. Come and talk to me instead, father. The priest moved round the bed, bent, and clasped the hands of the old dying man. Is your soul prepared, my son? Asked the priest. That's what I want to ask you about, wheezed the ancient voice. What will happen to me, what will I see on the other side? Is there a life after this? Quietly the priest talked, telling only that which his religion permitted, or knew. The breath of the sufferer grew shallower and fainter. Quickly the priest hurried to the door and beck. 119. One to the doctor. Shall I administer the last rites? He muttered. The doctor moved to the bed and lifted a wasted arm. Feeling no pulse, he fitted his stethoscope to his ears and sounded the sick man's heart. Shaking his head sadly, he pulled the sheet over the dead man's face and muttered, I wonder, father, I wonder, what is the other side of life? I wonder. For reasons of their own, Western religions do not tell much about death. But, after all, death is a very serious matter for all of us, just as is birth, and it seems that death should logically follow the chapter about mediums, because if no one died, mediums could not try to get in touch with them. So we are going to discuss death because, no matter who we are, death is something that comes to all of us just as does birth. But, you know, death is actually birth. Let us see how that comes about. A baby within its mother dies to that warm, comfortable life within, and reluctantly emerges into the cold, hard world without. Birth pangs are death pangs, death to the old, birth into a new state. A person dies upon earth and the pains of death are the pains of birth into a different state of existence. Most times death itself, is a quite painless process. Actually, as death approaches, nature, in the shape of various metabolic changes, introduces a form of anesthesia into the body system, anesthesia which culls the actual perceptions while allowing the body reflexes to make certain movements which people think of as death pains. People actually associate pain and death, or if you prefer, death and pain, because in the majority of cases people who are grievously ill die apparently in pain, but that pain, remember, is not the pain of death but the pain caused by the illness itself. Perhaps there is a cancer, something affecting body organs, grasping at nerve endings or eating them away. But let us remember that this pain is the pain of the illness, the pain of the complaint, not death itself. death, the actual state of transition from this world to the next, the actual state of leaving this physical body, is a painless process because of the aesthetical properties which come to most bodies at the moment of death. Some of us know what it is to die and to remember everything, and to come. 120 Back still remembering.